The June 19th Committee of the Senate Rules. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3130, take a little bit of testimony and move that bill once we get a quorum. We are officially in subcommittee. Mr. Stembridge, House Bill 3130.
House Bill 3130 comes to you in a engrossed version. It specifies that any alcoholic malt beverage being sold by an off-premises sales licensee on the effective date of the measure may continue to be sold and taxed as a malt beverage until December 31st, 2004, even though the alcoholic beverage contains more than 0.5% of distilled liquor. It also declares an emergency. I know of no amendment.
Is that correct? Mr. Gilliam, come on up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Oregon Grocery Association. This bill is before you because of a federal ruling on flavored malt beverages that would have forced the OLCC to take them off the shelves of the grocery store. This bill is a compromise of the brewers, the retailers, and all the concerned parties to keep them on the shelf until December 31st, 2004, which should be adequate time to have a federal standard that Oregon can adopt, and we can move on with business as usual, as it has been for the last 30 years.
No amendments?
No amendments.
Great.
Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Gilliam? Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing. Open work session.
I move House Bill 3130 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 3130 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any conversation? Any amendments? Any objection?
Oh, is this the one for the golf carts?
No, Senator Corcoran, this allows you to go to your grocery store and get Doc Otis or Mike's off the store counter.
Whatever. All right.
Any objections? Hearing none. It's passed. Who wants to carry it? Senator Atkinson, you want to carry?
Senator
Beyer wants to carry.
Senator Atkinson, right. I'll carry it. Whatever. Sure.
Make up your mind, you guys.
You get the hammer, you make the decision.
You want to carry it? Sarah Atkinson will carry. Okay.
Why don't you co-carry it? That would be very special.
I'll be back in a moment.
Thanks. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 786. Senator Morris is on a timeline, and so we will work around his schedule. Until then, I would ask Roy Thorpe, Dan Gardner, and Rob Drake to come forward. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, everyone.
Dan Gardner, were you sergeant at arms in the House in 1993?
Sure.
I was not the one who put the box of Lucky Charms on your desk. Okay?
That was 1995.
Okay.
What I want to know is, were you sergeant at arms then?
No, sir.
There's a Dan Gardner listed as sergeant at arms.
Madam Co-Chair, SB 786 prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity in education, employment, housing, public accommodation, real property ownership, and public services.
No, was that consensus? Hi. Please proceed. Roy, I guess you're first.
Hello. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roe Thorpe, and I'm the Executive Director of Basic Rights Oregon. Basic Rights Oregon is a statewide organization whose mission is to end discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in our state. We represent over 67,000 supporters throughout the state, a few of whom are here today to testify. Senate Bill 786 is of the utmost importance to Basic Rights Oregon. As an important piece of legislation, it is long overdue. Similar bills have been introduced each and every session for over 30 years. 14 other states, plus the District of Columbia, have passed legislation that adds sexual orientation to their civil rights laws, and 3 other states also include gender identity. Oregon is a state where we value fairness and equality. Most Oregonians would be shocked to learn how much discrimination still takes place toward gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people here in Oregon. Oregonians overwhelmingly support this legislation. In a 1997 poll here in Oregon, 83% of Oregonians said they supported laws banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation in employment. This is consistent with Gallup poll findings from May of this year, showing that 88% of Americans oppose workplace discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Oregonians have defeated the last 3 of 4 statewide anti-gay ballot measures. Several municipalities, Eugene, Ashland, Multnomah County, Portland, and Salem, have all passed anti-discrimination legislation that includes sexual orientation and/or gender identity. And in 1998, Oregon courts declared in Tanner versus OHSU that employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is unconstitutional. We are here today because currently in Oregon, if you are a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender citizen, your civil rights depend on your zip code. Often people are forced to make choices about where they can live and work that take them away from their extended families and communities. Others choose to keep their lives a secret, never telling the truth about themselves, even to those they love the most. Some leave Oregon entirely, and many face discrimination repeatedly and silently, with no recourse. Basic Rights Oregon asks that the Senate Rules Committee show their leadership in the fight against discrimination in Oregon. You have a remarkable opportunity here. In a legislative session that is filled with thankless budget decisions, you have the chance to take a stand for which your state can be proud, against discrimination, and for fairness, equality, and human dignity. Our 67,000 supporters are counting on you. We urge you to pass this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I appreciate the opportunity to appear here today to provide testimony in support of Senate Bill 786, which would prohibit discrimination against persons based on sexual orientation or gender identity in education, employment, housing, and public accommodations, and public assistance. The bill would also require state agencies to eliminate discrimination against a person based on sexual orientation and gender identity. These are basic civil rights protections that should have been in place long ago. Under current law, it has long been illegal to refuse to hire or fire or discriminate against an individual in compensation, terms, condition, or privileges of employment because of a person's race, color, national origin, sex, religion, family relationship, age, mental or physical disability. Taking protected family leave applies for workers' compensation or associating with anyone from one of the protected classes. The intent of these protections is to encourage the full utilization of the workforce by removing arbitrary discriminatory standards that serve as barriers to employment, fair housing, educational opportunities, and public accommodations. It's the policy of the state of Oregon to ensure human dignity to all people within the state and protect their health and safety from the consequences of intergroup hostility, tensions, and practices of discrimination of any kind. Ending discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in Oregon is good public policy and consistent with existing civil rights protections that are designed to protect our most vulnerable citizens. In 1997, I was a member of the Oregon House of Representatives and not the Sergeant at Arms, Senator Corcoran. Anyway, similar measure passed overwhelmingly on the floor vote of 40 to 20. Unfortunately, the measure never passed the Senate floor. You have an opportunity to change that today. While the legislature has yet to take action in Oregon, Multnomah County, Benton County have implemented such an ordinance, as well as the cities of Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. They've all moved forward by adding sexual orientation and or gender identity to existing non-discrimination policies. The Bureau of Labor and Industries currently has an intergovernmental agreement with each of these municipalities in enforcing their ordinances. For the fiscal year to date, we have processed 33 cases regarding sexual orientation or gender identity under these contracts. We have received inquiries from aggrieved individuals from all over the state, from Eugene to Baker City. and we could not help them because there are no state laws or local ordinances in place to protect them. While the local ordinances are an important first step, these protections need to be enjoyed by everyone who lives in the entire state. I thank you for the opportunity to appear here today in support of Senate Bill 786 and urge its passage.
Thank you. Mayor Drake, welcome.
Thank you. Madam's co-chair, I'm Rob Drake. I'm the mayor of Beaverton, and this year I serve as the president of the League of Oregon Cities. The city of Beaverton supports the passage and adoption of Senate Bill 786 and strongly encourages you to send the bill to the full Senate for approval. The city's Human Rights Advisory Commission has unanimously endorsed passage of this bill, and the city council and I have unanimously concurred with their recommendation. Banning all forms of discrimination is essential to basic human freedoms and will help enhance all people's quality of life in Oregon. Oregonians continue to experience pervasive discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, employment, health care, education, and everyday life. This plays out in the forms of unfair hiring and firing practices, disregard for harassment, and denied access to public and private accommodations. These types of unfair and unkind actions create and enhance hatred and intolerance in a free society. In supporting Senate Bill 786, you have the opportunity to send a very positive and strong message to all Oregonians that hatred and intolerance will not be allowed and is illegal. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Nick Graham, Oregon Family Council. Good afternoon. Welcome. That's fine.
Do these pick up okay, or do I need to scoot them?
You might want to pull one in.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nick Graham, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Family Council in opposition to Senate Bill 786. First, I would like to thank you for allowing me to testify. I would also like to start by saying that the Oregon Family Council in no way actively participates in lobbying or promotion of legislation that would in any way decrease the current level of fairness and impartiality that the homosexual community receives in Oregon. Our organization is one that relies solely on biblical mandates, and we serve a vast group of pastors and Christians all over the state who do the same. We understand that there are Christian organizations in this state who take an unnecessarily volatile role in their opposition to the types of diversity issues before the committee today. Let me assure you, we are not one of those organizations. We have a belief system that we adhere to that is one of reconciliation, not condemnation. Please hear our hearts that our goal is not to condemn this lifestyle, but only to persuade our government from taking an active role in condoning it. We feel that Oregon's homosexual community receives ample support throughout our state, and current laws are in place in both the Oregon Constitution and the U.S. Constitution that provide equal opportunity to all of Oregon's citizens. We see no reason for the state of Oregon to take on a role to further advance or condone this lifestyle through an extension of civil rights. We also see some very practical flaws with the inclusion of sexual orientation and gender identity in Oregon's revised statutes relating to anti-discrimination and affirmative action. I will quickly expound on one section that causes a great deal of concern. Section 6, which would amend ORS 659A.403, and Section 7, amending ORS 659A.406, both refer to a desire that no place of public accommodation can discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Our concern with these sections comes in multiple cases where an individual choosing to dress or act as an individual of the opposite sex would have access to bathrooms, shower rooms, etc. Imagine if you were with your daughter in the women's locker room at the public swimming pool and an individual born a male at birth walks into your shower facility and begins to undress at the locker next to yours. I would assume that if you would not feel violated, many of Oregon's citizens would. Or a recent case of an anatomically female police officer given permission to change, shower, and use the bathroom facilities of her male co-workers. Does this bill supply sufficient recourse for individuals and employees of businesses who refuse to address an individual by their new name or use the same facilities as them? If an employee refuses, can they now be removed because of their beliefs? Again, this section is not our only concern. We oppose the entire bill, but this is one example of how far-reaching much of this legislation is. I realize that we can come up with a list of what-ifs and talk all day, and I understand the intent of the proponents of this bill is not to allow men posing as women to infiltrate our public swimming pools. However, we feel that there are many holes in this legislation that could allow individuals to act in a manner conflicting with the intent of the proponents. It could also create cases where an individual's rights to hold true to their belief systems could now be in jeopardy. In the past 23 years, the Oregon Family Council has put forth a great deal of effort towards pro-life causes, and we've heard large amounts of testimony regarding situations that occur in only a fraction of a percent of the cases. Yet most of the legislation we promote is disregarded because of these issues alone. We would assume then that if equally important possible problems were found with other legislation, that legislation too would be invalid. The Oregon Family Council believes Senate Bill 786 is unnecessary and in many cases causes more problems than it fixes. Thank you for your time and considering my testimony. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for being here. Any questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Senator Morris, your timing is impeccable. Come on up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Frank Morris. I am a state senator from District 8, representing the communities of Albany and Corvallis. I'd like to focus my testimony from a very personal perspective. Before I decided to enter the public arena, I really did not give a great deal of consideration to the issues that's before you today in this bill. But once I decided to make that jump into the public arena, it really forced me to look at the core values that I have, the things that I think are important, and come to some public conclusions that could be shared with respect to my belief surrounding this issue of sexual orientation. What I did is I sat down and I drafted, and I could have brought it, but I just sat down and started drafting. What are my core beliefs? And then I decided to make those public. And in the process of making them public, I shared with family members what my beliefs were. And in fact, a family member asked me if I would email them the statements that I had made. And I did. And it wasn't too long afterward we got a phone call. And I share this with you because it's very personal. But I think this whole issue really is a personal issue. The person on the other end of the phone, a very close family member, was in tears. And she said, "You don't want to know." And my wife said, "We do want to know." And this family had carried this burden on their hearts for an excess of 20 years with respect to a son. And the son is gay. And it was in the context of me making the statement publicly with respect to what I believe that allowed that family to share what had been kept very discreet and quiet in their family. And the conclusion that I've come to, and the reason that I decided that it was the right thing to do to sign on to this bill as a co-sponsor, is that no matter what we do in life, that the most important thing is how we treat one another, and that we are called to treat one another with dignity, respect, and love. No matter what the circumstance, whether it be race, whether it be religion or ethnicity or sexual orientation. And when you talk about what it means to treat persons with dignity and respect and love, there's a certain proactive nature to that. You need to live those words. And that's the reason that I signed on to this bill, and the reason that I think that it's appropriate for this committee to pass this legislation out. It's the right thing to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good job.
Any questions for Senator Morse?
Thank you.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I just want you to know how much I personally appreciate you coming forward, and also appreciate the process you went through to get here. It shows real depth of character.
Thank you.
Despite all your wrong votes on everything else.
Okay. Dave Fidanke, Shauna Bates, and Brian Varley. I don't think I've had the pleasure of your appearance, Mr. Fidanke, this session.
Yeah,
in this committee?
Yeah.
Okay.
We weighed in on some of the...
Madam Co-Chair, okay. Senator Brown, I believe I may have been here when you were out of the room.
Oh, it was in the other room? Okay. Go ahead.
He looks a lot different in this light.
For the record, David Fidanke, Executive Director, American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, testifying in support of Senate Bill 786, as I have in numerous legislative sessions, and as my predecessor, Stevie Remington, did prior to my tenure with the ACLU, going back to 1973. I've only been doing this since 1983, so relative newcomer. I'd like to begin by addressing a couple of issues. One is the state of the current law. Because as Roe Thorpe mentioned, in the case of Tanner versus OHSU in 1998, the Oregon Court of Appeals held that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation by state government agencies, or by implication, local government agencies, is unconstitutional under Article 1, Section 20 of the Oregon Constitution. But in getting to that decision, on the way to that holding in the case, the Court of Appeals interpreted the current employment discrimination statute to also prohibit sexual orientation discrimination in many circumstances, not with regard to insurance programs, because there is an exception for benefit programs in the employment discrimination statutes. But they pointed to the language of ORS 659.030, subsection 1, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of, and in the long list, on the basis of a person's sex or the sex of a person with whom the employee or applicant associates. And the court held that that language included sexual orientation. Now, unfortunately, that holding by the Court of Appeals has not been fully implemented by the state of Oregon. And we believe that it's very important to make this protection explicit in the statute, to make it crystal clear for employers and employees alike that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, and for that matter on the basis of gender identity, is unlawful in Oregon, and should be unlawful. And one of the most important things that passage of Senate Bill 786 would accomplish would be to define both of those terms for purposes of the employment and other discrimination statutes in Oregon. And I want to note that, in answer somewhat to the testimony you just heard from the representative for the Oregon Family Council, sexual orientation in this bill is defined to include all sexual orientations. That is, heterosexuality, homosexuality, and bisexuality. This passage of this bill would protect all Oregonians from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. And that is critically important, just as the law protects all Oregonians from discrimination on the basis of race or on the basis of religion and the other categories. This is not a statute that provides any special protection to any class of Oregonians. This statute provides protection for all Oregonians against discrimination, and that is critically important. Everyone should know that they will be judged based on their performance on the job, not because of who they are or what religion they choose to be part of in our society today. And Co-Chair Brown and Co-Chair Clarno and other members of the committee, we strongly urge that you move this bill to the Senate floor and help make these provisions law as they should have been for many years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Brown, Co-Chair Clarno, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shauna Bates, and I'm a student at Western Oregon University, soon to be a grad student at Portland State. Today I'm here to support Senate Bill 786 on behalf of the Oregon Statewide Student Equal Rights Alliance, otherwise known as OSERA. OSERA, which represents students at Oregon's seven public universities, Lane Community College, and OHSU, works to ensure equal access to higher education for sexual minorities. Senate Bill 786 will include sexual orientation and gender identity in Oregon's existing non-discrimination laws. For students at Oregon's public universities, this bill is especially important because it will directly apply to residence halls. Over 10,000 students live in residence halls on Oregon campuses, and it is critical that they are protected from harassment and discrimination. I have often witnessed students suffering harassment because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. I have seen the hostile environment this creates for students who want nothing more and deserve nothing less than the right to live, work, and study on our campuses without fear. Senate Bill 786 will help ensure that all students are protected from such discrimination. Beyond our college campuses, thousands of Oregonians face daily harassment and discrimination at their jobs or when trying to secure basic needs such as housing. While Oregon prohibits discrimination based on race, religion, gender, and age, our state still allows for intolerance based on sexual orientation and gender identity. We now have the opportunity to join with other states that have enacted protection against such unfair treatment. In all, there are 21 states and more than 200 cities and counties have enacted some type of protection from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Senate Bill 786 will provide the basic civil rights and protections that all Oregonians should expect. OSERA and the Oregon Student Association ask that you support Senate Bill 786 and make Oregon a place where all residents, including students, are treated fairly, without regard to their sexual orientation or gender identity. Make Oregon a place where equality and civil rights are upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. What are you going to be studying at PSU?
Master's of Social Work.
Great. Any questions? Go ahead.
Madam Co-Chairs, committee members, my name is Brian Varley, and I guess I'm just a citizen of Oregon, and I happen to be gay. And I'm just here to sort of tell a story, something that happened to me and my partner a few years ago, 1996. We were going to a hotel, and we were going to Eugene to stay with some friends, and we wanted to be pretty close. My partner had AIDS, and he couldn't walk very far. And so we tried to get hotel rooms that were close to wherever we would be. So we found one, and it was within our price bracket. We like to keep it pretty cheap, you know. And so we grabbed our stuff. We saw a vacancy sign. Went in. Got up to the counter. The woman greeted us very nicely. Hi, how are you? Fine. You know, we're looking for a room. She starts rattling off rooms with two beds. And both of us in unison said, no, one with a king. That'll be fine. And she just totally changed at that instant. A scowl, a stare, tilted her head, put a hand on a hip, said, I have one with two queens. Although it's funny, it wasn't exactly hilarious at the moment, you know? And I've learned over the years that you just keep looking forward. You know, you just get through the moment. And I was like, okay, we'll take that room. So we started filling out the paperwork. Seemed like it was going to be okay. Just going to let it go. It's like 6:30 and we're supposed to meet friends around 7:30. So I didn't want to leave and go do another search for a hotel. Then the couple came in. I presume they were a couple, male or female. Presume they were straight. Came in and asked for a room. They wanted one bed. She said, yeah, I've got one with a king. Really loud. It was such a message. It felt really cruddy. We went ahead and stayed, and we thought, well, tomorrow morning we'll just talk to the manager. It'll be okay. So we went out that night, had a good time with our friends. It was a little bit tainted, but not terrible. Got up the next morning, went down, talked to the manager, told him what happened, and he just laughed and said, a room with four queens. You know, that was pretty much it. We were done, we checked out, and we went and found another hotel room that was further away. We didn't get to walk to where we wanted to go. Cost a little more money. It was an inconvenience. Didn't like it. I've never forgotten it. That was Denny's last year of his life, and I really hated that he had to experience those kinds of things in the last part of his days. So that's why it's crystal clear for me. I have good memory about it. That's my story. I have plenty others, but that's the one I thought I'd share. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions? Comments? Thanks for being here today. Letha Garrett, is Jackie Dingfelter in the room? I haven't seen her. Okay, and Drew, why don't you come on up?
Dingfelter's kind of hard to see. She's not very tall.
That's fine. We can get her on whenever. Hi, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good. You can go ahead and start if you'd like.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Drew Gadbois, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 786. I am a self-identified transgender youth who is becoming active in Oregon politics. In my 17 years, I've lived in Clackamas County, Hillsborough, Ashland, and Portland. And I want to share a story of something that happened to me actually living in Portland. When I came out as trans, I was living in a girls' residential group home. I was one of 10 people who lived there, and we had two staff online all times, and they were to help support us, hand out medications, run groups for the house. And everyone who lived there was either in care or custody of Department of Human Services. When I came out as trans, all the clients and the staff were very supportive and immediately changed name and pronoun as though I preferred. And they even had a training where a trans man came in and discussed trans issues and gave people education and had an opportunity for them to ask questions. However, when the program director found out, he was very quick to say that it could not be referred to as Drew and could not be referred to as male. And I felt as though I'd been crushed. I'd just come out, and I was feeling really good about myself, and all my self-confidence was down the tubes. When I questioned as to why he said that I could not be referred to the way I preferred, he just stated that he didn't want to create political controversy and did not want to upset my parents. A couple weeks later, he told me I couldn't access any of the mental health services I had been on a weekly basis. Through the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, I'd been accessing Roots and Branches. It's for queer youth counseling. and I'd been going to the trans group and using the recreation center as a good support, and found some great support, other trans youth. And I felt really caged and alone, and I felt really alienated from the trans community that I was really excited to be a part of and get to know my community. All I could really do was go to school, and in school you face a lot of bashing on a daily basis, especially in the public school system. And the only other thing I could do was attend groups at my house with 9 other girls. Though some of my staff were supportive of me, and even though the program director had given them specific orders to not refer to me as Drew and as a male, they did anyway and put their jobs in jeopardy. And I know there's staff who are still currently employed there who don't feel it's safe to be out there as trans. And one staff, before they had left, sat me down and he said to me, look, I just wanted to let you know you're not alone, and that I did not come out at work because of the fact I didn't want to face discrimination as an employee under this man. So that made me feel really horrible about the situation. This continued for 11 months of no accessing services at all. And finally, after people giving the program director information and telling him he was wrong over a period of 11 months, he decided that he was wrong and allowed me to, required the staff to refer to me as Drew and as a male. And I finally felt like my identity was validated, and I felt like I wasn't just some subject that people were studying. So that's why I urge you guys to support of Senate Bill 786, because there are other youth just like me who I don't want to see go through the same thing.
Thank you. Thanks for having the courage to share your story with us.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Retha Garrett. I'm a longtime resident of Oregon, and I currently reside in Bend. I come before you today because, as a citizen, I have legal rights. Some of those civil rights have been and continue to be violated. Oregon's current non-discrimination laws exclude gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered people who are citizens of this state. On a civic level, it concerns me because I believe everyone deserves to have their rights recognized. On a personal level, it disturbs me because I'm an openly gay woman, consider myself also to be transgendered, and like my young friend here, I have had numerous times of discrimination. I ask you to support Senate Bill 786 to give all Oregonians equal protection under the law. I've been discriminated against in education and employment. Although there's a court decision which says employment discrimination based on sexual orientation is illegal, it has been impossible for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people to do anything effective about discrimination in our state because we have no clear-cut laws protecting our rights. By passing this law, we would have equal opportunity under the law to pursue remedies against discrimination. Most citizens of this state would take that for granted. Gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered people feel like second-class citizens in this area. In 2001, I was let go from a counseling job. I'm a great counselor. I have many recommendations. I have long standing in that field. Up to the very day that I was fired, I had excellent reviews for my work, excellent relationships with my co-workers. I was fired because one student and her parents decided that as a lesbian, I was a threat. No allegations of wrongdoing were leveled at me. I was just let go. I didn't know then about the court decision, and I felt that I had no opportunity to defend myself, my position, and no recourse after the fact. With the passage of House or Senate Bill 786, these acts would be considered discrimination under Oregon law. The issue should be whether or not I'm a good counselor, not a gay counselor. From 1993 until 1996, I attended Northwest Christian College in Eugene. I was the second openly gay person that Northwest Christian College admitted. I am the first and only woman who's ever applied for and graduated with a degree in their pastoral ministry department. While I was at NCC, I was subjected to intolerance and discrimination on a daily basis. My own faculty advisor, who was the head of my program, told me to, quote, stick to my own people, that I would never be recommended for a church ministry because I was a lesbian. NCC is a private school and therefore considers itself above the law. But this concerns me because NCC at the time had a joint degree program with the University of Oregon. The administration of NCC should never have been able to discriminate against me or anyone on the basis of sexual orientation. It being in the city of Eugene, it was also violating the law in the city of Eugene and the state of Oregon. The next year after I graduated, another woman applied, and another lesbian woman, and was told outright that she would not be allowed to go to the college because she was an out lesbian. Again, because they had a joint degree program with the University of Oregon, this should not have been able to happen, but it did. In conclusion, I would like to thank you for hearing my testimony today. I would like to ask sincerely that you vote for and support Senate Bill 786. Let every citizen of this beautiful state have equal protection under the law. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dingfelter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jackie Dingfelter, House District 45, and I really appreciate you having this hearing today, and I am here to testify in support of Senate Bill 786. I support this on a personal, I personally support this bill very much, and I am going to be reading into the record some testimony from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The executive director, Peggy Michael, could not be here today, so she's asked me if I could read this into the record. The Fair Housing Council of Oregon is a private nonprofit agency serving the state of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Their mission is to provide equal access to housing through education, outreach, and enforcement activities. They currently have a grant from the Housing Department, from HUD, to conduct these activities throughout the state. And they work hard to educate potential victims of housing discrimination about their rights in order to prevent them from becoming actual victims of illegal discrimination and or to assist them with the enforcement processes available in the event they have already fallen prey to these egregious practices. The stories that they hear about the effects of sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination are heart-wrenching. Several local jurisdictions have added gender identity and sexual orientation to their protected classes. However, in certain areas of our state where individuals are not protected on that basis, their lives are seriously impacted. In those locations, no amount of education or advocacy can prevent the type of abuse the victims encounter. Making sexual orientation and gender identity a protected class on a statewide basis is absolutely essential to furthering fair housing throughout Oregon. By the time victims have made contact with the Fair Housing Council, many have lost their housing, perhaps destroyed their credit, and possibly thrown away whatever tiny savings that they do have as a safety net to set aside, sometimes in order to flee an untenable or life-threatening situation, and all due to the effects of bias against them because of their gender identity or their sexual orientation. Often the Fair Housing Council finds that there's no way to help these individuals who have their personal property damaged, pets killed, and or children beaten or threatened by neighbors who are biased. All of these types of issues have been reported to their staff in situations where housing discrimination has taken place. And no income levels or neighborhoods are exempt from these types of discriminatory activities. Victims and perpetrators come from every walk of life in every corner of our state. Renters and home buyers alike suffer discrimination based on their gender identity or sexual orientation. And the discrimination itself ranges from name-calling and disparate treatment in terms of the conditions of the transaction to violence directed at the housing consumer, sometimes even by the housing provider. Many times the Fair Housing Council learns that the landlord has forced the housing consumer, the victim, to vacate the premises in an attempt to stop the harassing action of the neighbors at a rental property. They have had multiple reports of landlords harassing their renters after discovering the sexual orientation or the gender identity of the partner or spouse of a renter in order to create such a hostile environment that the renters vacate under duress. This leaves the renters with damaged credit, lost investment, and the potential of homelessness at the time that they vacate or in the future when the landlord gives them a derogatory rental reference for breaking the agreement, even though they were simply trying to enjoy their right to the quiet enjoyment of their dwelling or protect their own or their household's members' lives. In locations where sexual orientation and gender identity are not protected classes, the Fair Housing Council's hands are tied in attempting to pursue any kind of enforcement action after these sad events have taken place. In these cases, victims are not even able to recoup compensatory damages because the civil rights violation they have endured are not viewed as legal violations of their rights. These cases are difficult to prove after the fact, and the victims usually have such a derogatory rental or credit history from the effects of fleeing for their own safety or their family member safety, they are unable to find housing for which they can qualify to rent or purchase. Their lives are in ruin, and they may have suffered physical abuse as well. The villain in this story gets away with the crime to perpetrate it on future neighbors, renters, or community members. In this day and age of fears of violence from foreign terrorists in our midst, some Oregonians are being terrorized right in our own homes and neighborhoods by other Oregonians. Perhaps this is happening in your neighborhood right at this very moment. The proposed legislation is deeply needed in our state to add further protections to help prevent these devastating events from occurring. Please help people in Oregon truly live the American dream of equal access to housing for all by adopting this legislation. Thank you for considering this input. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Good questions. Thanks very much for being here. Sarah Gordley, did you wish to come on up? Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Avelle Gordley, and I represent Senate District 23, which includes wonderful neighborhoods in northeast and southeast Portland. And I just wanted to add my support for Senate Bill 786 and express that the hearing of the bill comes at a very wonderful and historic moment in the life of our state, in that 50 years ago we saw the passage of the public accommodations law in this legislative body. And at that time we were looking at a public accommodations law that would protect the civil rights of people, particularly African Americans, who had fought for the law since 1919. And Madam Chair, as you know, on this past Friday we had quite a remarkable ceremony marking the 50th anniversary of the passage of that law, with the Honorable Mark Hatfield present. And what strikes me about this particular moment is that it is time, in fact it is past time, long overdue, that we extend justice, that is what we're talking about, and rights in a way that adds sexual orientation and gender identity to Oregon's existing non-discrimination policies, including the areas of education, employment, housing, public accommodation, and public assistance. And pardon me for being a little out of breath. I ran down here wanting to participate this afternoon. Again, I just see this as a very important piece of legislation, a critical piece of legislation that can help move our state forward in a way that says we are inclusive of all people in the expression of civil rights and justice for all people. Thank you.
Thank you. We really appreciate being here. Okay, before I take the last panel, are there any members of the audience that wish to testify? Okay. Reverend Jean Ross, Logan Calville, Michael Barrett, and Gloria Holland Smith on deck. Hi.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. For the record, my name is Eugene Ross. I am the Conference Minister for the Central Pacific Conference of the United Church of Christ, and currently serve as President of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, which represents 17 Christian communions across the state of Oregon. I'm here this afternoon to urge your support of Senate Bill 786. At the outset, let me state that while among the member denominations of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, and indeed within my own denomination, there is not unanimity of thought on the broad issue of human sexuality, there is a common commitment to basic human rights. Both Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon and the United Church of Christ, as well as other denominations, have spoken out before when there were efforts to limit the rights for gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgender persons. The set of social principles from which Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon draws its guidance in its public policy statements sets forth the principle that all persons are equally valuable in the sight of God and should be so regarded by everyone. It further states that our religious tradition calls for a continuing affirmation of human rights. We recognize that basic human rights include the right to an education, adequate health care, due process of redress of law, and protection against harassment and social and economic exploitation. We believe that everyone should be protected from discrimination. That set of principles has not yet been fully realized across the state of Oregon. Discrimination continues to raise its ugly head in our beautiful state. As we've heard this afternoon, there are Oregonians who are discriminated against on the basis of their sexual identity. Many gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons live their lives in fear lest their sexual orientation or gender identity become known. They live their lives in fear because of the absence of laws which would prohibit discrimination against them. Discrimination in education, employment, housing, public accommodations, and public assistance. The absence of laws that would prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity opens the possibilities of persons being robbed of their God-given human dignity. And there is never any justification for robbing another person of his or her dignity. My own denomination, the United Church of Christ, as early as 1975, declared, "We hold that as a child of God, every person is endowed with worth and dignity that human judgment cannot set aside. Denial and violation of the civil liberties of the individual and her or his right to equal protection under the law defames that worth and dignity and is, therefore, morally wrong. A constant fear of losing one's job or having a place to live and the economic and social consequences of such a loss create suffering in human life. And the purposeful or neglectful creation of such suffering in human life is morally wrong. Senate Bill 786 does not provide any statement on the rightness or wrongness of any sexual orientation or gender identity, but it does recognize that a person's affectional or sexual preference is not legitimate grounds on which to discriminate against that person in the public or private sector. Let us determine to end this discrimination which creates so much human suffering and tragedy. I urge you to support and pass out to the full Senate, Senate Bill 786, and thus put this state on record that, like Multnomah and Benton counties and the cities of Corvallis, Portland, and Salem, we Oregonians across this state will not stand for discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity in either the public or private sectors. Again, let me thank you for the opportunity of speaking with you this afternoon.
Gloria, do you want to be next?
I wouldn't mind being last.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Logan Calvo. I'm a 46-year-old person. I'm married. I have four children. I've lived in Jackson and Josephine counties since 1980. Prior to that, I lived in the city of San Francisco, California. I was employed by the city of San Francisco Department of Public Health as a mobile intensive care unit paramedic from 1976 to 1980. I also enlisted in the United States Naval Reserve from 1979 to 1986, where I served as a hospital corpsman. From 1980 to 1996, I was employed as a deputy sheriff with the Josephine County Sheriff's Office. At the end of my employment, I was held the rank of sergeant. During that course of employment with the sheriff's office, I served in many capacities, including a shift supervisor, sheriff substation commander. I was a detective in the major crime unit, a detective in the Josephine County Interagency Narcotics Task Force, as a SWAT team leader, and later promoted to commander. I was deputy of the year at one time. I taught law enforcement courses at Rogue Community College and at the Oregon Police Academy. During the 16 years in the sheriff's office, I received numerous commendations from various persons, including Governor Vic Atiyah, Admiral Watzenheimer, Commander Redcom 22 for the Northwest, Vice President George Bush, and Senator Mark Hatfield. The nature of my commendations received during my employment varied from saving lives by performing CPR, removing auto accident victims from a burning vehicle, delivering babies along the side of roadway, disarming an armed man intent on harming himself, and for the expertise and diligence I showed in conducting complicated criminal cases from homicides to bank fraud. To say the least, I had a distinguished career at that point. However, from the earliest recollection of my childhood, about age four, I felt I was different than other boys. I enjoyed feminine clothing, companionship, activities, and would otherwise have preferred to have been born female. In my late teens, I felt a need to express my female gender identity, and at that time, that sort of thing was shameful, confusing, and considered countersocial. I compartmentalized that part of my life and kept it very secret. All the while, I carried on a successful, responsible career, which was satisfying to me in the knowledge that I was contributing to society. At no time did I ever do anything illegal or otherwise bring any kind of doubt or mistrust to my profession, to my family, or to my colleagues. In fact, I went out of my way to be sure that when I did express my gender identity, it was in such a way that it was unlikely to be discovered. In October of 1995, I had rented a storage unit in Medford, Oregon. It was broken into and the contents were stolen. I was notified of the theft and requested to file a police report reporting the theft. Since the storage unit contained only my feminine belongings and effects, I felt I couldn't report the crime to the Medford Police Department because I would have to provide a list of stolen property. And I felt I couldn't lie about what was in the storage locker and therefore couldn't file a police report. Within a week of the break-in, I was called into the sheriff's office by my immediate supervisor. A second supervisor was called into the room and the door was closed. At that point, I was told that the Medford Police Department had recovered my stolen property alongside some railroad tracks after being found by a citizen. I was told that I was personally identified from very personal, intimate pictures contained within the property that they had recovered. I was also told that the pictures had been passed around the police station for others to see, which included officers from my department who had been there for training at the time. At some point during this event, it was decided that all of my recovered stolen property should be personally held by the Medford Chief of Police. When I asked for my immediate return of my personal property, I was told that I couldn't have it, that it had to be examined for evidence of violations of department policy and potential crimes. I did not receive my property until 4 months later in January of 1996. I was ordered to comply and accompanied immediately to see a mental health worker at the Josephine County Mental Health Department. I was also ordered to submit to an AIDS HIV testing as I had been badly injured on the job in September of 1995, wherein a fellow deputy came in contact with my blood while trying to stop the bleeding and save my life. In the spring of 1996, I was ordered to travel to Portland, Oregon for a psychiatric determination for fitness for duty to return to work. I went before a panel of doctors who determined I was not fit to return for duty at that point. During conversations with my immediate supervisor, and kind of off the record, I was told that the sheriff at that time did not want me to come back to work as I was a freak. The sheriff felt that I would no longer be able to perform my duties because of the fact that I had been discovered to dress as a woman. I was further told that it would be a big mistake for me to try to come back to work. As such, the sheriff, in conjunction with the county's risk manager and attorney, were in the process of putting together a settlement for in return for my resignation at that point. I spoke with three different attorneys, some associated with the American Civil Liberties Union at the time, and was told that I really had no case against Josephine County. Since all of my property had been returned to me intact, and with a finding that no department policy or crime had been committed, I was not injured. I was, quote, made whole again by the process of returning my property. Furthermore, since the contention of my fitness lied within the expression of my gender identity, there was no protection for me. My only recourse at that time, I was told, was to possibly file a federal lawsuit, which would be groundbreaking at that time and likely to cause a great deal of media attention. I was advised I also had no cause to file a suit against the Medford Police Department. I am a person with an incongruous gender identity. I've been so for my entire life. I can't, and I've tried in vain to do otherwise. You can attach whatever labels you wish, such as transvestite, transsexual, transgender, crossdresser, or what other gender variant term, or whatever is politically correct at the moment. The fact remains, I have always been a responsible, caring, decent citizen, and I'll continue to do so. I will do so along with the other 8.5 million transgender persons
in this country. Excuse me. We need specific, unambiguous protection from discrimination, no matter who you are, in employment, housing, education, thank you, and public accommodation. In closing, without specific legal protection, a decorated and dedicated public servant was forced to resign from a 16-year career based upon the expression of gender identity, which was not and never interfered with my employment of that of me or brought any doubt or discredit to any person until the transgender status was revealed involuntarily. To any logical, compassionate person, this must be considered wrong, and steps need to be taken to provide protection of civil liberties in this case. I'm not asking for any special rights, just equal rights. Gender expression needs to be specifically named, as otherwise it's left to an ambiguous individual interpretation depending upon who's interpreting it at the time. Thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Madam Chair.
Sir.
Logan, thank you for coming all the way up from Central Point. That means a lot. I mean, that's where I'm from. And I apologize for my delay. I was just talking to my wife as she was headed home to Central Point. So thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
Gloria.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and members of the committee. My name is Gloria Holland Smith. I'm a resident of West Salem. I am retired from 30 years of teaching, and I'm a member of the Salem chapter of PFLAG, which is Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I speak today in favor of Senate Bill 786. As an educator, I've had the opportunity to work with many excellent teachers and administrators who are gay or lesbian. Unfortunately, every one of these fine people, such as the previous speaker, lived a closeted life, lived in fear of losing the careers about which they were so terribly passionate. These folks, all of whom have given enormously to Oregon's excellent education community, have hidden behind a screen of secrecy, unable to discuss even with colleagues their families, their pastimes, their vacations, their special events, and their personal losses. Senate Bill 786 will begin to put an end to this dehumanization of some of our finest citizens. As a teacher, I've witnessed hundreds of acts of hatred, intolerance, and discrimination on the part of our students against other students in the halls and classrooms of our public schools. How devastating it must be for a 14-year-old boy who is just beginning the journey of self-discovery to be called a fag or a homo by his classmates. Just the perception that a child might be gay has caused, and society has allowed, many insensitive, ill-informed students to harass, intimidate, and bully the child who might be different. Not that many years ago, legislation was created to make illegal any form of sexual harassment so that today a woman might go to work or to school without the fear of being the target of sexual intimidation. The time has come for this legislature to make illegal any form of discrimination regarding real or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. Senate Bill 786 is the place to start. As a mother, I have experienced the disappointments and the joys of learning that my only child, my daughter Annie, is a lesbian. Annie is a 1993 graduate of North Salem High School. She was a strong student, a cheerleader, student body vice president, a thespian, and an exchange student to Costa Rica. She graduated from the University of Oregon and took postgraduate studies in education at Pacific University. While I have always felt myself to be fairly liberal about the issue of homosexuality, I found that liberal is easy when it's not your own child. I had to do some heavy-duty soul-searching when Annie came out to me 6 years ago. What, I thought, is my truth about Annie? Well, of course, I want her to be happy. But as I watched her high school friends getting married, having babies, rushing home to their moms with all the good news, I found myself severely disappointed. Recently, Annie and her partner announced that they, too, want to get married. Well, now, that's just a little weird. But then I thought, what is my truth about Annie? Well, my truth is that I want my beautiful, intelligent, well-educated daughter to have the same rights, the same respect in society as her straight high school girlfriends, the same dignity, the same opportunities as her straight stepsister. I want for my daughter that she be more than that she be happy. I want legislation from you that will allow my daughter to live in a world free from discrimination due to her sexual orientation. Senate Bill 786 simply gives our sons and daughters the same rights given to their brothers and sisters. Thank you very much.
Any comments or questions for this panel?
Thank you very much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you. Last but not least, Michael, you're still in the room?
Okay, why don't you come on up?
Anybody else wishing to testify? Come on up.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, my name is Michael Barrett. I'm a citizen of Portland, and I am here representing myself and also Basic Rights Oregon. Very grateful to them for making me aware of this process. I was born in 1971 in Albany, and I attended a very wonderful public school system there. I hope it still is. And then after leaving Albany in 1990, I attended Linfield College for 4 years. During my years of education in Oregon, it became paramount to me, it became apparent to me that justice and equality are paramount in the United States and in our political system. And until a couple of years ago, I would say I took it for granted that we had something called an Equal Protection Clause, which, as you know, is in the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution that says no state shall deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Likewise, the Oregon Constitution states that all men, and I presume women too, are equal in right, and all free governments are founded on the people's authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness.
We haven't reached a decision on the women part of that yet.
You haven't?
No.
Okay. Just take it for granted that maybe you will. So I took that for granted for a number of years until I was faced with a situation a couple of years ago at my place of employment where my sexual orientation was actually used against me as a way to hopefully force me to resign, which I eventually did. And without going into all of the details, among the things that happened was being outed at a staff meeting and references being made to a sugar daddy that I didn't have, also at a staff meeting. And I contacted the Bureau of Labor and Industry, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, a couple of local employment attorneys, and also the Lambda Legal Defense, which is a gay legal organization. And the response from all of those organizations and individuals was unanimous in my situation, and that was that I really didn't have any case because my place of employment was in Clackamas County. If I had worked in Multnomah County, they said I probably would have a case. One of the attorneys did mention the Tanner decision and the possibility that that might actually apply, but he wasn't sure. So it came as kind of a slap in the face that for all of these years I had taken for granted the fact that we do have equality and justice in the United States and in the state of Oregon. And here, in fact, these people were telling me that we don't have equality. And that's why I'm here today, is to urge you to support and congratulate you on bringing this issue to the Senate. And I also just want to say that as a citizen of Oregon and a person who's traveled quite a bit around the world, probably 35 or 40 countries and lived in five, I've always been really proud of being an Oregon citizen. And I've always bragged about how politically progressive we are. And I would like to brag about this as well. And once again, I want to thank you for bringing this issue to the Senate. And I urge you with all my heart, soul, and bones to pass this bill, because we really need it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
For the record, my name is Tobias Hillmeyer, and I'm a student at the University of Oregon. I've spent most of my life in Eugene, and while I had nothing really planned after hearing other people's stories, I feel compelled to tell you mine. I was born and raised with lesbian parents, and that had impacted me on a lot of levels. But one story that really sticks out in my mind was when I was at a fairly young age, I was always very curious about what people were doing. And while visiting the mall, I was curious why some people were sitting behind a desk and handing out flyers. When I asked them, it turned out that they were trying to support the first Measure 9 bill, and they told me that they were trying to pass a law to prevent gays and lesbians from having children. And so while I did not know all the details of the law, I assumed that if it did get passed, police officers would come into my home and take me away and send me off to a foster home. Now, that was my first political awakening, and I'd paid attention to politics ever since because my life has depended on it. And one of the things I realized through those experiences was my parents took me to one of the rallies about the No on 9 campaign, and they had a friend who had wanted to come but had decided not to because there would be news media there and that she might have her face on the TV, which would mean that her employer could potentially find out that she was at that rally, and that she did not want to risk that for fear of discrimination and losing her job. Now, while I made it through the public school system with relatively little harassment about my parents' sexual orientation, my brother was not so lucky. In middle school, he had a large amount of harassment, with everything from accusations that he was conceived with a strap-on dildo to parents of other children coming onto the school grounds and asking if they could adopt him. One thing that really sticks out is after being called a fag, he retorted, "asshole," and then was sent to the principal's office for swearing, while the other child was not punished whatsoever. Another instance that I recall was when I was at South Eugene High School, I learned of a story at a Churchill High School dance where a male student had gone to the dance wearing a dress and was attacked with a baseball bat by other students. And when a parent tried to intervene, the parent was injured. Now, all of these stories are the different ways that I've been impacted by the harassment and discrimination that, for the most part, is allowed. And one thing that would have really altered my experience growing up and going through the high school system is that all of those teachers that you've heard of from the previous speaker who are afraid to come out and speak out about their experiences. There are even straight teachers who are afraid to come to the defense of my brother and I and other students fearing harassment like this. They're afraid to come to our defense because they are afraid of being labeled gay. And being given that label as a teacher often threatens your position and your employment. So once again, these are some of my stories. As everyone you've heard from today, I also have many others, but not the time to tell them to you. I thank you for your time and consideration, and this, and we'll answer any questions you have.
Come.
Thanks.
Anybody else in the audience wish to testify? I would like to state for the record that we received a numerous packet of letters, which I will not read all of the names into the record, but it's like about 40 letters. So those will be added to the record as well. Any other business to come before the committee? We thank you all for being here this afternoon. Appreciate your testimony. Public hearing's closed.